Something big hit his back. A chill almost hid the pain, as if his knee had gone numb from cold. He blinked his vision clear, and the white became black. Then the black became shades of blue and gray, and he was staring at midnight clouds. On his back, staring at clouds. How long had he been out of it? Seconds? Minutes? He lifted his head, looked over his chest. Tusk had the pale knife up in front of his tooth-filled mouth. A tongue slid out between the long teeth to clean the blade off with 1, 2, 3 licks, like the old Tootsie Pop ad with the owl. Christ, he had to be losing a lot of blood if he was thinking about candy commercials. Oh, Jesus, that was his blood on the knife. He craned his head a little higher and saw the spear still embedded in the tree. He didn't recognize the thing dangling from the spear at first. The jeans had flopped down and wrapped around the ankle, half hiding his boot, even though his socks still clung to his calf. Doug caught a glimpse of his bloody stump before one of the others forced his head back down and passed the knife under his chin. Something warm built up in his throat. The chill spread, and as consciousness left him again, he thought how lucky he was not to be awake for what came next. 43. Chase gave the twisted wires one last squeeze with the pliers, then flattened the twist against the cable. He wiggled the small piece of rubberized fabric between the exposed copper and the rest of the bundle. It flopped down over the twist on one side, hung loose on the other. Not great, but it should work. For a little while, anyway.
Ready?
Asked Veek.
Yeah, just ease it in.
He heard the connector scrape, and the cable tightened up with a faint tremble. The splice stretched just enough for him to see it, then it clicked into place and settled.
Damn it,
said Veek. She came back down the catwalk, glaring at the silent machine around them, and grabbed the ivory spear.
No, it's okay, he rolled to his feet. I took the tube back out, didn't want to blow it if there was a surge.
A moment later, he stood before the bank of vacuum tubes, the replacement still in its sheath of paper. He glanced over at Alex and Seth, at Katanga bracing the door.
Everyone ready?
Seth shook his head.
He's very weak.
Don't worry about me,
Alex said.
Seal the hole. Now.
Veek crouched near him.
But we're going to need your help. Nobody knows this place like you do.
Alex wiggled in Seth's arms. He reached toward the bloody side of his vest, then into the pocket, and dragged out his small leather notebook. He let it drop to the floor, where it just missed landing in the messy puddle of his own blood.
My most recent notes, settings, adjustments, observations, a few ideas for improvements. You'll figure them out with a little work. There are more in my quarters.
One of the planks came off the windows with a loud crack. An arm stretched through and grabbed at the air.
Seal the hole,
Alex said.
Save the other world. Then save yourselves.
Chase reached out and positioned the vacuum tube over the empty socket.
Everybody ready?
For what?
Asked Katanga.
Just get ready. This'll be a little uncomfortable.
The first mate let out a dry laugh.
That's been my whole day.
Chase pushed the tube down into the socket. The machine let out a purr that built quickly to a roar. The catwalks shook. The vacuum tubes flared like little blinding suns. Outside, some of the seraphs howled. The nausea hit Chase's stomach like spoiled food and too many shots of low-end whiskey. He managed to yank his arm up and away before he dragged it through the double line of vacuum tubes. His tongue twitched and flexed, waiting for the stomach acid. The catwalk hit his knees, then it loomed up and his hands stopped it from smacking him in the face. Instead, it swung over and slammed into the right side of his body.
Three hard convulsions rocked him head to toe. His head whirled. Time passed. The lights flickered, dimming back to normal, and kept flickering. Chase coughed twice, took a few deep breaths to clear his head, a few more to calm his stomach. Katanga moaned a few words in what Chase thought was Somali. Seth responded with twice as many, ending with an emphatic, "Mother of God." At the edge of Chase's eye, Veek rolled to her knees.
"Everyone good?"
"How are you up? Already?"
"I think I'm close to double digits when it comes to hopping realities," she said. "You get used to it."
Chase rolled himself onto all fours. He pushed himself back to his knees, swayed, and got all the way up to his feet. A gust of wind came in through the windows and passed a collection of new, different scents under his nose. A sharper bite of salt water, a bit more of a chill, and a rougher, outdoorsy smell like fresh soil and chopped wood. Chase leaned his head back to take a deeper sniff of the air and saw the shadow dropping down through the machine.
"Look out!"
He stumbled back against the rack of cables and vacuum tubes, catching himself before he slammed into all the glass. The Seraph landed on the catwalk in front of him with a crash and a swirl of its cloak. It lashed out at him, slashing the jagged tip of its spear across his chest, and turned to the others. Seth tried to roll to his feet between the creature and Alex, but a hoof-like foot caught him in the side and slammed him down against the metal stairs, cracking his head against the edge of the landing. Chase felt blood on his chest. Pain told him the spear's sharp edge had cut straight through one of his nipples and some muscle, but his ribs had taken the worst of it. The blood seemed to be flowing more than pulsing, which he hoped was a good sign. The Seraph straightened up to its full height, the top of its wide hood almost brushing the supports for the upper level. A wet, popping yowl hissed out from beneath the ragged cowl, followed by a series of clicks. It swung its head from Katanga at the door to Veek closer to the catwalk and whipped around once to glare back at Chase. All three of its hands shifted on the spear as a low, clicking growl slid out of its throat.
"Keep it away from the machine,"
Veek yelled. Katanga lunged forward, grabbed the spear, and drove the hooded Seraph back into the support column near the stairs. The hood used two hands to wrestle with the spear, while its other arm reached up from beneath to grab at the first mate's throat. Katanga let go with one hand and punched it three times in the side, close to where kidneys would be on a human. It twisted around, its cloak swirling open, and threw him off. Chase braced himself and tried to catch Katanga, sparking 100 razors of electric pain across his chest. They tumbled to the platform. The expanded steel scraped Chase's bare arms and his head tipped back, stretching the wound and fanning the bonfire of pain across his chest. Everything went white for a second. Maybe a few seconds. He blinked the white away in time to see Katanga and Veek pull the spear away from the hood. The Seraph slammed the back of its fist into Katanga's head, knocking him away. Another hand slashed out at Veek with its jagged fingernails, but she stumbled back out of its reach, still clutching the spear. Seth groaned on the stairs, rolled to his side, felt around his hip. Chase turned, pushed off the wall, and forced himself back to his feet. Veek roared and charged forward with the spear. It slipped in her hands, but still pierced the creature's stomach. Its jaw flexed open, spreading its teeth wide, and it howled. The hood grabbed the spear, yanked it free, and twisted it away from her. Katanga tackled the monster again, driving a punch into the stomach wound as he did. It snarled and dropped the spear. His legs kicked at the floor as he drove the hood back against the front door. All three of the Seraph's hands wrapped their long fingers together around his head and squeezed. Katanga screamed. His arms flailed out wide and back in. His legs kicked at the floor. Seth pushed himself up from the stairs and fired his pistol twice, then twice again. Chase didn't think the man even aimed, but when his head swung back to the door, the hood's ragged cowl had taken on a new, sagging shape. Its hands dropped limp to its sides. It crumpled away from the door and onto Katanga. He turned with it and let the monster fall past him to hit the platform with a sound like a gong. Veek took a few slow, deep breaths.
God, this sucks.
Nice shooting, said Chase. Seth let the pistol drop into his lap.
I hope so. That was the last of my bullets.
Chase's gaze dropped from Seth to Alex. The man in the bloody safari clothes lay in a heap at the base of the stairs. Without support, he'd slumped to the side when Seth leaped up to protect him.
Alex?
Seth shook his head, showing off a gash where his skull had hit the staircase landing.
Pretty sure he's dead. I was about to say so when that thing attacked.
Veek stopped halfway through a breath.
What?
Three limping steps carried Chase to the body. Veek stumbled alongside him, fighting back a wheeze. Alex's eyes stared off into the machine. The wound in his gut had stopped pulsing. Chase dropped to his knees with a wince, got his fingers against Alex's throat, and waited. He moved his fingers to the other side, then tried taking the man's wrist. Nothing.
He lost a lot of blood, said Seth. Different time, different place. Maybe we could have done something, but not here. Crossing back over did him in.
Chase looked at Alex's body and thought of the graveyard, of the tombstones, of all the dates.
160 years old,
Veek said.
And he dies like this.
There aren't a lot of good ways to die, said Seth.
Chase tried to straighten up, but couldn't get his chest to move.
He only made it to 160 by killing a bunch of children. Let's be honest, he was just as much a monster as that thing.
He waved a hand at the dead Seraph. Veek stayed crouched by the scientist.
Maybe, but at least he was our monster.
I feel like I have missed a lot, said Katanga.
Seth barked out a laugh.
You have no idea.
Chase forced himself back to his feet and swallowed most of the wail that tried to fight its way out of his throat.
Oh, hell,
said Veek, squinting at his blood-soaked chest.
How bad is it?
He tugged the remains of his t-shirt back together, hiding the wound.
Not fatal, I think.
You think?
Echoed Seth.
It's shallow.
Chase made a show out of taking a deep breath, then lifted his arm up so he could grab the opposite shoulder and pull the long gash together.
Hurts like all fuck, but I think it'll be okay for now. We can worry about it later.
He took a few cautious steps to the far end of the platform. Something sat under the window, and for a brief moment, he thought it had to be some sort of Halloween decoration. He bit down on the first words that popped into his mouth, letting them hiss out between his teeth. Veek heard the noise.
What?
He pointed. Right next to the row of rivets along the edge of the metal platform lay a gray arm. Long, chipped nails at the end of gaunt fingers, an overly sharp elbow. The arm ended just past the swell of the bicep, a perfectly straight cut that could have been made with a laser or a guillotine. He stepped past it, pressing himself closer to the wall. The stump of the arm was perfectly smooth, just an oval of almost blackened flesh. It made Chase think of a charred tenderloin, a comparison that assured him he would never eat steak again.
One of them had its arm through the window when the machine came back on, he said, when the walls came back up. Sharp fucking walls, said Katanga.
Damn right,
Veek said.
Wait,
Seth prodded the hooded corpse with his toe.
Did this one come with us, or was it already here? They're in both worlds, yes?
Veek nodded.
I think so. They're kind of like vanguards for the squales, or pilot fish, maybe? Some kind of servants? We're still getting the hang of where they fit in.
Seth looked up through the machine.
So there might be a way inside up there. Another window, maybe?
There's a door to the roof,
Veek said, her face grim.
And an elevator shaft.
Katanga spit on it. It's dead. That's all that matters.
Unless there are others,
she said. Chase looked up past the wires and coils surrounding the window frame through the gap left where the plank had been torn off. He could see outside now, and this close he could feel the chill of the wind. It tore across the clearing, dragging dark shapes of different sizes with it. Clouds boiled in the night sky, throwing lightning back and forth between them. A rumble of thunder overwhelmed the howl of the wind, and then another, their different pitches playing off each other like...
Oh, shit.
Chase staggered back to the others, stepped over the hood's body, and pulled the bolts on the door. A tight trio of fresh, round gouges sat near the open position of the high bolt. Dark blood ringed all three, and dull metal glinted at the center of one, half buried in the thick wood. He could guess where Seth's fourth bullet had come to rest. He yanked on the door. It thudded against the Seraph's feet, and he kicked at its oddly jointed legs. Get it away from the door, Seth raised an eyebrow. Where to? Just away from the door. Katanga and Seth each grabbed one of its wrists and pulled. Chase tugged on the door with his free hand until it was wide enough for him to slip outside onto the steps. The wind pounded him, grabbing at his flannel shirt and hair. He flattened himself back into the doorway. Scattered down the stairs, shielded from the wind by the concrete banister, sat a collection of cauterized gray meat and bone. Hands, fingers, toes, the front half of a foot, most of one arm. The wind died for a moment, then whipped back to near hurricane force, settled down, surged back. He slipped to the side, braced himself against the banister, and went down the staircase. He took a step with each lull, and the wind pinned him against the concrete on the surges. He inched his way down to the bottom, stopping before the end. He could feel the wind trying to turn him, roll him around the squat pillar at the end of the banister so it could carry him off into the darkness. He pictured the wind flinging his arms wide, flaying his wound open, and he tightened his grip on his own shoulder. Something grabbed his arm just above his elbow. Veek stood on the step above him, her hair and collar flailing in the wind. Her mouth was set in a grim line. They both looked up. The squale filled the sky. Its tentacles stretched through the clouds, reaching for the roof of the building. They'd get close and yank back, like hands too close to a fire. Behind them, one of the massive wings swept down again, scattering the clouds the way a broom scatters dust. The pressure wave hit the ground like a bomb, blasting out in every direction, shoving them both against the banister. The thunder pushed its way into Chase's ears, the sound of hunger. So hungry, such eternal, endless hunger. He closed his eyes, thought of Dina, and let out a sad laugh the wind snatched away.
So I think we saved your reality, he said.
Veek leaned close to his ear.
Yeah, but now we're stuck back in yours, with them.
44. Chase and Veek stumbled inside, and Katanga slammed the door behind them.
We're back with the monster, Seth said, just a simple, numb statement.
Yeah, Chase thought about saying something more, but had no idea what. He stared at the bloody figure on the floor, the man who tried to save the world, the man who killed children to do it. Outside, the wind tore at the building's facade. It shrieked on the corners. A new surge blasted against the boards and panels, stretching across each window. Seth coughed, a low, quiet noise.
How long do we have?
Veek shrugged.
It's still maybe a mile away. The tentacles are just reaching us.
She looked at the antique machinery around them.
I'm not sure if this is still doing anything.
You turned it on, said Katanga.
We turned it on, but we don't know what it's doing or how well it's doing it. Chase tipped his head toward Alex's body. He did something different when he made the hole. We undid that, but I don't think we fixed anything else. The machine's still on its last legs. Seth looked up into the machine, toward the roof, toward the thing beyond the roof.
So what are we thinking?
5 minutes until it's right on top of us, maybe 10. It looked slower.
Maybe it's full after eating Makara,
Katanga said. Seth's eyes went wide.
It ate the ship?
The ship, the captain, I think it drank up a few 100,000 gallons of ocean while it did.
It's not full, said Chase. They don't get full. Ever. Veek crossed her arms.
No, they don't.
They're always hungry, he added, remembering the thunder in his ears. Since the moment he'd first seen the squale back on the beach, it had been clear about its hunger.
Just nothing but bottomless, endless hunger.
Katanga shifted his feet. Seth slid back just a little. Even Veek radiated a bit of tension. Chase looked over his shoulder at Alex's body, at the dead Seraph on the catwalk.
What? Not a good time to start muttering all their catchphrases,
she said. He blinked.
What? No. It just... You hear it sometimes. The thunder's like words in your head. That's not better.
Seth's arms tensed.
I'm fine, really.
Chase slowly let go of his shoulder and put his hands up. He winced past a little pain, then looked to Veek.
You're our best expert on all this now. What do we do?
She shook her head.
I don't know.
You must have some idea.
I don't. Every time when things went wrong in the building, the machine kind of reverts to its native reality. But that's what this one did.
Then we need to reset it, said Seth. Set its frequency back to the other world so we can escape.
Chase shook his head.
I don't think it works that way. We'd just be punching another hole between realities.
But it's done it before,
said Veek.
Our building in L.A. has gone back and forth without ripping holes. It just kind of flipped.
Yes, said Seth. Make it flip.
I don't know how to do that, said Chase.
Well, figure it out,
said Veek.
I thought you were an electrician.
I'm a repairman.
So repair it.
I'm not even sure where to begin.
She scooped the notebook off the floor and held it out to him. 3 or 4 dark streaks stretched across the cover.
Start with this.
Chase flipped through it, looking at the math and circuit diagrams.
You're missing the point, he said.
He stretched out his good arm, setting off needles of pain across his chest, and waved the notebook at the machine surrounding them.
I literally wouldn't know where to begin. Remember what we said before about this being like one of those old gym-sized computers?
Yeah.
In a regular piece of electronics, a television or a receiver or something like that, I know where everything is. I'm used to seeing circuits that fit in your hand, using a little precision screwdriver to help me trace a connection. This is bigger than a house. It's like...
He slapped the notebook against his hand until an image popped in his head. Remember in Back to the Future when Doc makes a microchip for Marty out of 1950s parts and they have to strap it to the hood of the DeLorean because of how big it is?
Yeah.
Well, here it's made of turn-of-the-century parts, and it's the whole machine. The flux capacitor, the time circuits, the ignition, the transmission, the car stereo, all of it. I trained on the DeLorean, and you're asking me to figure out the steam train version in 5 minutes. A triple thunderclap shook the building for added emphasis. It faded, but the building kept shaking, as if some massive truck was driving by, or a huge plane flying overhead.
We must do something soon, said Seth. I believe we are running out of time.
Chase slapped the book's spine against his hand.
I don't know what to say.
Veek looked down at the body.
Alex thought we could get out.
Seth raised a questioning eyebrow.
How do you know that?
Those were his last words, weren't they? Save the world, then save ourselves.
But how? There's nowhere left to go. Actually, nowhere. That's what all of Doug's videos said.
Maybe he was just trying to be inspiring, said Katanga.
Veek shook her head.
No, that wasn't how he was saying it.
Unless he was lying, said Chase. Just trying to get us to do what needed to be done so we wouldn't think too much about sacrificing ourselves.
Another rumble shook the building. Dust spiraled down in swirls and clouds. A few small pieces of brick tumbled down with them, bouncing off the various struts and supports. Chase let his eyes wander around the front door. Like most of the machine's interior, a wide array of antique electronics covered the doorframe. Old fabric-wrapped cables, one of the gray-white porcelain insulators at each corner, copper coils, a set of... the coils.
The fishman, said Seth. Murdoch. He said there was a yacht on the other side of the island.
Veek shook her head.
Other side of the island in my world, not here.
We could go look. Maybe it ended up here, too.
And then go where? Assuming we even made it away from the building without ending up as squail food.
Chase leaned in close to study one of the coils. It took him a moment to recognize it. He hadn't seen an electromagnet setup like this in years. At least a dozen of them were spaced out along the doorframe.
This isn't going around the door, he said.
What?
Veek turned to him, then to the door. He traced the thick cables with his eyes.
All of this, I thought it was just diverting around the doorway, but it's placed here deliberately. These components, they're like a whole little subsystem or...
Or what?
It's picture in picture, said Chase, the words slipping out even as the meaning dawned on him.
Veek furrowed her brow.
What?
It's like a picture-in-picture subsystem, he said.
He checked the cables, tried to identify power lines and control wires.
This whole thing, the machine, is basically a big gateway, right? It can be opened wide or locked shut.
Maybe,
she said.
Yeah, basically.
Chase swept his hand around the front door's frame.
Well, this is a little gateway. It's a separate system we can power up and set to a different frequency.
He watched their eyes light up, filling with the same excitement that tingled through him.
It's a doorway home, said Veek. An Albuquerque door.
45. Veek watched Chase dash back and forth across the platform. He ran his fingers along cables, tracing them to connectors and boxes and other things she didn't recognize. He kept spouting a lot of technical jargon as he did. She understood some of it, didn't worry about the rest. He seemed pretty sure of what he was doing. Another long rumble shook the building. She counted 3, 4, 5 thunderclaps in it, and the faint echo of words. Chase stopped to listen to the thunder, staring up at the machine's distant ceiling. Then he shook his head and returned to his work, picking up the conversation right where he'd left off.
That's why we could see the family outside even before Alex punched the hole between the two worlds, Chase explained. The windows are set up like the door. They're, well, reality windows. They're the same kind of subsystem, but it looks like not as stable. Probably dangerous to go through, but fine, just to look and listen.
That's why the monster thing lost its arm, said Katanga.
Yeah, maybe. There's probably a bunch of interplay depending on how Alex had things set at any given time.
His finger swung back and forth, tracking a set of cables. He winced as he bent down, unplugged one, and pulled the end as far from the wall as he could.
Untie this from the rest, he told Seth. I need as much slack on it as you can get.
What about the other lines?
Chase shook his head.
They shouldn't matter.
Shouldn't?
A surge of wind ripped 3 planks from the far window. The wooden door shook in its frame. A flash of lightning turned the world outside to stark white.
Making some slack, muttered Seth.
Katanga joined him.
and the two men set to work on the various cords and strings tying the cables together. Chase beckoned Veek to come with him, punctuating the move with another grunt of pain. She followed him over the dead Seraph and down the catwalk to the bundle of cables he'd been working with earlier. He examined one connector, then another, then a third.
"Do you really know what you're doing?"
she asked.
"Or are you just trying to make us all feel good before we die?"
Chase managed a humorless chuckle as he crouched down by a large cluster of connectors. "I think I know what I'm doing, enough that I can fake what he was doing."
"That's not very reassuring."
"I don't have time to figure out his whole system, so I'm just hot-patching the systems we need."
"That's not helping much either."
He tugged at the knot and waved for her to untie the next one. It's like jury-rigging it, but just with the power source. We don't have time to trace everything back and actually do this through the control area like Alex would have, or did."
"Did?
Doesn't it make sense? Before Alex made the hole, Murdoch walked out the front door and back into your reality, and Alex kept talking about how he'd seen the squales eat other worlds, how he and the other him, the old him, were working on things together, plans they'd made. They were talking to each other, a lot, and they weren't depending on the little random cracks that pop up around the island." Veek fumbled with the knot. To her eyes, it was a dusty brown-black blob against a black smear. She worked at it with her fingers, trying to find loops or loose ends to work with. Chase finished with his and took a few steps past her, untying the next one. "So we don't have time to figure out how to control it, but if I can make the right connections here, I should be able to bypass the controls, give it power directly, and turn it on. And hopefully, it'll still be set to the last thing Alex used it for, which will most likely be..."
"My world,"
finished Veek.
"When Murdoch went through."
The knot finally opened up in her fingers. She plucked at the twine until the cables sagged apart. Chase nodded and pulled the cable free. They dragged the cable back toward the main platform where Seth had pulled out the matching end from the doorway. The cable bumped over the Seraph's head and caught on its skinny teeth. Veek reached to tug it free just as Chase gave a hard yank. Three of the teeth snapped off with a sound that fell between breaking glass and cracking ceramics. The wind surged up to hurricane strength, and a low, crumbling sound echoed through the building. Lightning flashed again outside, and Veek caught tiny, thread-like glimpses of it all around her. Cracks in the brick-and-mortar facade of the machine. A double thunderclap rolled in after the lightning, shaking the building and setting off a few more mini-avalanches of dust. The sound faded, and they all sprang back into motion. Katanga cleared his throat.
"What about everyone else?"
"Who do you mean?"
asked Veek.
"The rest of this world, will they survive?"
"Most of the world's already gone,"
said Veek.
"There's at least a dozen of these things. They're in every major city. They've eaten millions and millions of people already, just like the one that ate your crew. Maybe billions at this point."
How can you be so sure?"
"One of the guys here had a tablet with a satellite link."
"The bearded man, Doug?"
"Doug," confirmed Seth. He glanced over his shoulder toward the building's back door.
"Yeah,"
Veek said.
"And it's kinda my job to keep tabs on facts like that. Population centers, numbers, that sort of thing."
Katanga looked up.
"One of those things in a city?"
"In a dozen cities. All across the planet, for most of a day now."
"And there's no hope?"
Veek thought about it. About all the nights sitting up with Nate, Zila, Mike, and the others, talking through worst-case scenarios and trying not to think about what all the numbers represented.
"There's always a chance, I guess,"
she admitted.
"But once they make it to a world, the odds of survival are... well, from everything I know, there aren't any. Nothing ever survives."
"Nobody?"
"Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Humans, animals, plants, random compounds in the air, and water and soil, they just eat all of it."
"But this machine is stopping them."
"Slowing them. Maybe. We don't even know that. Alex said the other end of it, the Los Angeles end, is already gone. This end's damaged at best, so really, we're like..."
She searched her mind for a good analogy.
We're like a ship whose engines have died, but it's still moving forward in the water. The question isn't if it's going to stop.
Just when, finished Katanga.
Yeah.
He thought about it, gave a slow nod, and moved to join Seth. The building shook again. Ripping, cracking, tearing sounds echoed from outside. Dust and grit rained down on Veek's head. She swept it away.
Chase?
He'd connected the two switches and backtracked another bundle of wires to the control panel near the stairs. I think I've got this. He stuck his head into the superstructure, tracing the wires behind the panel. She stepped to the window and looked outside. The lightning came fast and often, and the wall shook from an onslaught of thunder. The flashes threw huge, stark shadows over the clearing, letting her catch quick glimpses of the forest. A much thinner, more distant forest. The clearing now stretched almost 100 feet away from the building. The most distant part consisted of a field of jagged stumps, fresh and white, even in the darkness. At least 50, maybe 60 trees had been snapped off. Some of them must have been almost 2 feet across. Images from history websites and books sparked in Veek's mind. Logging camps where the forest had been stripped away. The trees themselves hauled off for wood or paper or just to burn so there'd be room for cattle. The thought of raising cattle made her shiver. In some places, the squail hadn't even left stumps. In the lightning flashes, she could see rough patches of churned-up earth where whole trees had been ripped free, roots and all. A new barrage of lightning made her flinch. The thunder hammered messages into her skull. She risked a quick look up and saw electricity arc across acres of greenish flesh. Wings stretched out. Tentacles reached down for the building, for her, hungering for her. Her eyes froze open, her neck refused to move. With the dim bit of her mind left, she managed to slide her foot away, ruining her balance. Her hips shifted, her shoulders tilted, and animal instinct took over, pushing itself into her forebrain. She staggered back from the window and caught herself before she tumbled over.
Oh, shit! Shit, shit, shit.
Seth stepped toward the window, then reconsidered.
What did you see?
She looked past him to Chase.
Make it quick.
Chase looked at the window up through the machine to the crumbling building.
Is it close?
Not it,
she said.
Them.
46. Chase looked at her, at the window.
How many?
At least two, I think. Going off wings, I can't.
She trailed off and closed her eyes, as if struck by a sudden headache.
Got it, he said. The door's just about set. Get ready to run.
He flipped two switches, stepped back to the main platform, and slammed the two big connectors together. A sharp snap of electricity echoed across the platform, followed by a whiff of ozone and a faint sizzle. The sound faded to a hum he felt as much as heard. In the corner of his eye, the world outside the window shifted.
The window?
Despite the crashes of thunder and the howl of wind, the world he could see outside the window was calm and quiet. A breeze touched the tops of the trees at the edge of the clearing. A few gray clouds drifted through the sky, lit up by the moon.
Damn it!
What?
He looked back over the cables, followed them into the spider web of wires and lines covering the wall.
I got cables confused somewhere. We powered up a window, not the door.
So we go out the window. Won't be the first time.
Seth charged for the opening.
No,
shouted Chase. He waved at the electrical elements around the window frame.
The doors and windows are set up differently.
What does that mean?
It means windows aren't doors. Just give me a minute.
Another crack of thunder shook the building. This one could have been an explosion on the roof. It almost knocked him to his knees, and the movement ignited the gash on his chest, sending needles of pain through that side of his torso. A hazy trickle of dust rained down on all of them. Seth recovered and stared out through the window frame.
It looks fine to me.
Veek joined him at the window.
The guy who says it looks fine is usually the first one to die.
Shut up. Chase looked around, forced down a swell of queasiness, and grabbed the severed arm. The lukewarm flesh yielded beneath his fingers as the hand flopped at the wrist. One of the long nails scraped against the windowsill as he brought it up and tossed it out between the remaining planks. The arm sailed 12, maybe 15 inches from the window before coming apart in a puff of gray-green dust and vapor, like water hitting a hot frying pan.
"Still want to go out the window?"
asked Veek. Seth glared at Chase.
"Well, fix it, repairman."
Chase wiped his hand on his jeans and yanked the cable apart. A few threads of electricity leaped from the brass pins to the other connector and then faded. The view beyond the window shifted again as a dozen palm trees blinked out of existence and a shadow fell across everything.
"No pressure," called out Katanga, "but they're here."
Chase scrambled to the door, tracing the cables again. There was the left side power. It tied in to main power there. The cable ran here.
"1 minute. We are out of minutes."
Veek waved at the doorway, at the cables stretched across the floor.
"What can we do to speed this up?"
Chase glanced at her.
"Untie everything, every cable."
She set her fingers to a knot. Seth and Katanga joined her.
"My kingdom for a knife," muttered Katanga as he pulled at loops of twine.
Chase followed the line into a bundle, sidestepped to follow it more, and saw where he'd lost it. A third cable and a wall support hid the place where the window and door lines had flipped.
"Got it."
He traced the line another 2 feet, found the right set of connectors, and pried them apart. He pulled at some loops, unwound a couple dozen inches of string, and tugged the cable free of the bundle.
"This one,"
he called out to them, almost yelling over the wind.
"Give me all the slack you—"
The hit came like a movie artillery strike. The air pressure shot up, muffling the sound of it against their eardrums, almost deafening them. They all lurched toward the back of the building. Chase barely had time to tighten his grip on the bundle of cables. Veek slid almost a yard, balanced on her feet before falling. Katanga hit the main platform hard, tumbled back, and his legs slid over the edge of the catwalk. Seth grabbed the edge of the door frame, but his body still flew out as if he'd been yanked by a rope. A chunk of brick and mortar the size of a watermelon crashed into the iron beam above Chase's head and exploded, raining hard fragments and coarse grit down over him. A quintet of bricks slammed rapid fire into the platform above them, each one shattering into red dust that sifted through the expanded steel. Another crash echoed down from one of the higher platforms. All through the machine came sounds like hail, hundreds of tiny impacts. Thunder pounded in his ears, more he thought than everyone else heard. He could hear the sounds behind it, hints of syllables and words, each one loaded with so much emotion, so much hunger. He shook his head, tried to clear it all away.
"Everybody okay?"
Veek braced her legs and helped Katanga drag himself back up onto the platform.
"Just open the damned door,"
she yelled over her shoulder. Outside the window, something massive moved through the clearing. Chase mistook it for a tree, but then a flash of lightning revealed it to be a massive column of greenish flesh, a tentacle, pulling back, building up for another strike. Chase found the loose connector between the window and the door frame. He yanked on it, shook it, tried to pull it free. Seth pulled apart a few more knots, letting the different lines sag. Chase pulled the cable across the platform, blew some brick dust out of the other connector, and slammed them together. The impact jarred his fingers, and the corner of the connector gouged his hand. He glanced back at the door, in time to see a St. Elmo's fire dance over the scarred wood. A few of the metal components around the door wiggled and shifted as the magnetic field built up. And then nothing. Another clump of bricks and mortar crashed into the platform between them.
"That should be it,"
he called out. Seth grabbed the door's handle and yanked. It jerked out of his hands. He checked the bolts, the big latch on the handle, pulled again.
"It's stuck."
"What?" Seth looked up and around.
I think the frame has shifted. It's wedged shut.
Oh, come on!
Shouted Veek. Seth placed one foot against a support strut, grabbed the handle with both hands, and heaved. Katanga looked at it.
We need a pry bar.
We don't have any tools, Chase yelled. Veek pointed down the catwalk.
The storeroom!
I don't think you can risk it.
We don't have much...
Seth bellowed in triumph as the door grudgingly moved back a single inch. His shoulders tensed, his arms swelled. He let out a second roar and a gap appeared between the door and the frame. Katanga stepped in, wedging his fingers in, throwing his weight back. The wind ripped at the building, through the building. Lightning flashed again, showing off the countless cracks and openings around them that let the wind flow freely through the machine. Chase heard a faint melody, like dozens of tiny bells. He followed it to the wall, to the banks of instruments, and saw flecks of dirt and grit pinging off the vacuum tubes, hurled there by the wind. Eventually, the wind was going to move something bigger. Seth and Katanga had the door open almost 3 inches. It scraped on the floor and the top of the doorframe. Katanga flipped around, put his back against the wall, and pushed. Somebody punched Chase in the side of the head, right by his damaged ear, hard enough that he saw white spots before his eyes flinched shut. He swayed on his feet, got his hands up to protect himself, but no other blows came. When something touched him, he smacked it away.
It's me,
snapped Veek. He opened his eyes, blinked a few spots away, found Veek wide-eyed, inches from his face. He stepped back, looked around, and his eyes fell to a dusty old cube of red brick near her feet, not far from the double connector powering the doorway. One corner of the brick gleamed, slick with fresh blood.
Hell, Veek said. Are you all right?
Crap, Chase murmured as the thunder pounded in his ears. He reached up to touch his aching brow, then studied the blood on his fingers.
It grazed you, she said, but it still looked like a pretty good hit.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
Good.
Chase took a step forward, trying to block out the ringing in his ears. The side of his head throbbed, but he didn't seem to have any balance issues or trouble thinking. He glanced back at the double connector again. It looked secure, but he knew it shouldn't stay that way. Katanga had both hands on the door and leaned into it. Seth heaved again. With a last squeal, the door slid open another 7, 8, 9 inches.
That's it,
Seth yelled as the door went another half foot and settled.
Come on,
said Katanga, waving them to the gap.
Let's get out of here before the whole place comes down around.
He twitched. One of the buttons came off his shirt and shot across the platform, trailing red threads behind it. The third gunshot was the only one not drowned out by thunder, and blood sprayed out of Katanga's mouth. He wobbled, his eyes glazed, and he crashed forward onto the platform. Anne stepped through the door with her pistol up.
Good to see you all again.
47. Veek froze as the pistol swung around to point at her. The only thought in her head was she'd escaped the squales twice now, but she was going to get killed by a crazy cult leader. Then Seth slammed into Anne from behind the door, knocking the gun from her hand, twisting her around and shoving her outside. Chase dropped to Katanga's side. Even from here, Veek could see the bloodstains on the man's back, the gaping hole at the base of his skull. Chase looked up and shook his head. Veek ran to the door. She felt a faint tingle of static as she stepped through and a faint shift in the air, like stepping outside from an air-conditioned store, just without much of a temperature shift. Outside, the sky was brighter, quieter. The change stunned her just for an instant. Seth and Anne wrestled in the green leaves swirling at the bottom of the stairs, neither of them looking the worse for tumbling down the brick and granite steps. Seth had Anne pinned beneath him, but leverage didn't seem to be a problem for the slim woman. She pushed up on his chest, giving herself room to deliver a punch to his ribs that knocked him away. Veek stopped halfway down the staircase as Anne stood up, and it crossed her mind that she hadn't thought to grab Anne's pistol. If she'd just picked it up from the main platform, this would all be ending right now. She hoped Chase would grab it
Anne had a pair of small green leaves stuck to her scalp. They wiggled loose, dropped to her shoulder, and scurried down her arm. She brushed the cockroaches away, and they landed with the hundreds of others swarming around the base of the building.
"You're not going to stop me,"
Anne said, just before Seth tackled her from behind. She went face first into the bottom step with a satisfying crunch. Veek winced, went to go help, then flinched back as a wave of emerald roaches swarmed up the staircase. Seth punched Anne twice in the back of the head, slamming her forehead into the edge of the bricks. On his third punch, she twisted around, knocking him off balance, and slammed her fist into his stomach. Seth flew back. His feet actually left the ground and crashed down almost 3 yards away. Anne pushed herself up to her feet. Her skin split open just above her brow, and blood covered half her face, drawing lines across her eyelids and cheeks. One stream ran straight down her nose.
"I almost pity you," she said. "You're trying to fight destiny. I'm the one who sets them free. I'm the one who saves the world. You're the one who's bug-fuck crazy," said Veek.
She threw herself at the other woman, knocking both of them over. Anne kicked her legs up, and the world spun around Veek before she slammed back down onto it. A moment later, Anne loomed over her, blocking out the sky. She grabbed Veek by the throat and heaved her back to her feet. Veek smacked at her arm, pried at her fingers, but couldn't get them loose. Anne wasn't actively choking her, but it felt like a definite side effect of the grip.
"When all this began," Anne said, "I'd honestly hoped you'd come to see the error of your ways, that joining us on our holy pilgrimage would open your eyes to the truth."
Veek tried to come up with a wise-ass response, but her constricted throat twitched too much for her to get any words out. She settled for kicking Anne hard in the crotch, and suddenly the grip wasn't as tight. Another punch to the arm released it altogether, and she stumbled away. Despite the clear pre-dawn sky, a blast of thunder came from the building. Anne and Veek both turned. Not from the building, Veek thought, just from the door. It's coming through the door. Her second thought was that Chase had been smart enough to pick up the pistol. He had it out at arm's length. He didn't look as confident as Seth, but having the gun out and aimed made up for a lot. Then something about her view of the pistol struck her as odd, and Veek realized it was aimed at her. "Stop it," he said. "Stop fighting."
"What are you doing?"
"Just stop." Another rumble came from the building, and a crash of stonework on metal. Veek leaned, tried to see around Chase and through the door to get a sense of how much of the building had collapsed. Of that building.
"We don't have time to screw around," she said,
her eyes drifting back to the pistol.
"We need to—"
"Quiet." The pistol wavered, but not much. Not enough. The roaches swarmed the top of the stoop and up the wall, crawling all around the door. They'd move close, scurry away, and then dash in again. Some of them scuttled back and forth across Chase's boots. They were bright green static around the doorway. A triple thunderclap echoed from the building. 1, 2, 3. Anne's body tightened. So did Chase's.
"You can hear them,"
said Anne. A bright smile spread across her bloody face.
I think I've been hearing them for a while now," Chase said. "Since we got here."
"That's good."
"No, it isn't," yelled Veek. Her throat hitched up, tightened, made her sound like puberty all over again. She forced her breathing to calm down.
"Snap out of it, cowboy."
The pistol jerked away from her. She felt a moment of relief, then realized it still wasn't aimed at Anne. It pointed between and past both of them. Something rustled behind Veek. She glanced back and saw Seth, still crouched to launch himself at Anne. He glowered up at the building.
"Just stay there," Chase said. "Please."
Veek took in a slow breath, took another one, steadied her breathing as best she could.
"Chase."
She couldn't manage much volume. Hopefully he could hear her over the sounds coming through the door.
Think about this, please. Remember what we talked—
I did think about it. It didn't take a lot. There's only one real choice. He moved forward, dropping down a step, then another. The pistol wove back and forth, pointing at her, at Seth, back to her. Then Chase slumped to the side of the staircase, pressing himself up against the concrete banister, clearing a path for Anne up to the door.
Do it, he said. End this. Smash everything. Unplug every cable.
The smile on Anne's face got even wider, almost ecstatic.
Are you sure?
Yes.
No!
Veek took two steps forward, setting a foot on the staircase, and Chase met her there. The pistol looked huge. The muzzle had to be the size of a quarter at least. Seth growled.
Don't, Chase said. Just don't.
And he winked at her. Veek froze. Anne gave her a wicked smile and went up the wide steps, two at a time. The roaches scattered, either fleeing or clearing a path for her. She shoved the door open another foot, letting the soft glow of hundreds of vacuum tubes spill out into the clearing.
Thank you,
she said without looking back. She stepped inside, raised her hand, and smashed it through a row of vacuum tubes. Veek flinched as the antique technology burst and flared and collapsed into shards. Her stomach churned. It was every nightmare she'd had for the past few years played out right in front of her. Anne smashed some more tubes. She pulled down two big knife switches. She turned back to them with a triumphant smile and noticed the cables stretched across the floor. She bent, grabbed it in both hands, and yanked the connector apart. The brass pins sparked and she vanished. It reminded Veek of watching a puff of smoke fade away. There, dim, and gone. All in less than a second. Chase risked a glance back over his shoulder and sighed in relief. His arm flopped at his side, dropping the pistol with it, and Seth slammed him up against the banister. He drove a punch into Chase's gut while his other hand pinned the arm with the gun.
No!
Yelled Veek. Chase wheezed something, a breathless wail of pain. Seth twisted the wrist, squeezed hard, and Chase's hand flinched open. The pistol clattered to the steps, and Seth kicked it away. Veek grabbed his arm before he could throw another punch.
He's on our side!
Nobody who points a gun at me is on my side.
Chase sucked in a breath.
I winked.
Well, I didn't see it, said Seth.
He did,
Veek said.
Jesus fucking Christ,
said Chase. His hand went up to his shoulder again, trying to pull his chest wound back together. Veek looked up the steps at the open door. The bank of vacuum tubes gleamed inside, adding their soft glow to the dawn light. The roaches slowed their frantic scurrying and wandered away, disappearing into the vines and leaves covering the building.
I thought... What just happened?
She smashed the machine,
Chase said.
Probably ruined it.
Seth waved a hand up at the building.
But it's fine. Not damaged at all.
Chase managed a weak nod.
Yeah. She smashed our machine, the one in our reality. And then she unplugged the doorway.
A weight tumbled off Veek's shoulders.
You mean?
He slumped back against the banister and rubbed his stomach where Seth had punched him.
She closed the doorway and trapped herself in what's left of our world. With them.
48. Anne smashed another row of vacuum tubes. They popped, sparked, and sprayed glass everywhere. She felt the machine shudder in response. It let out a low groan, and the lights dimmed. A few feet away near the body of the hood sat a board with dozens of little wires plugged into assorted sockets. It looked like a grade school electronics project. She yanked them all free at both ends, tossing them aside. She'd done it. She'd succeeded where so many others had failed. She'd beaten Kotarovich's damned machine. She'd saved the world.
The building shook, and the machine let out a blinding flash like lightning. The thunder hit an instant later. A bone-shaking crash she felt as much as heard. She staggered back from the panel of switches she'd been flipping. Something struck her shoulder, broke her shoulder. The pain slammed through her just as she registered the clump of bricks connected by lines of gray mortar. They hit the platform in front of her and shattered into rubble. Anne staggered away, the bones of her shoulder grinding and splintering with every jolt. She made it out through the door just as a large section of the building's roof came crashing down through the machine. Metal squealed and shrieked as the platform she'd been standing on tore free and tumbled down into the depths of the building. She pulled her arm tight against her body to stop it from swinging. Her fingers had turned dark red, almost purple, which she guessed wasn't a good sign. The arm still flared with pain as she hobbled down the steps. Every movement was like being stabbed or shot. A brief pang of guilt sparked in her heart for how unsympathetic she'd been to Judah and his multiply fractured arm. It was a breathtaking level of agony. But it had been worth it. She stepped away from the building and looked around the clearing. The man who'd fought her had fled, as had Veek. And no sign of Chase, either. Such a shame. Then, lightning cracked the night in half. The thunder shouted at her. She turned and looked up through the hurricane winds. Two of the great ones filled the sky. Clouds swirled beneath their wings. Lightning arced between them. Their tentacles swept up trees by the dozens. They were magnificent. They tore the building apart, and as they did, she sensed the change, the shift in the world. The last of the walls fell. Earth was open, exposed, stripped bare of all its defenses. Free at last. And then she felt their gaze upon her. They had seen her, noticed her. One of the tentacles came curling down out of the sky as the last of the damned machine collapsed in on itself. Anne felt a pang of regret for all the members of the family who hadn't lived to see this glorious moment. 49. They stood in front of the building and watched the sun creep up through the trees. The air grew warm. Not a cloud in the sky. Chase let his arm down slowly.
You and Katanga were prying the door open, and that's when I realized we'd have to close the gateway behind us.
He turned his head to Veek.
From everything you and Alex said, it seemed like the door might be a big enough hole for the squales to, I don't know, tear open, force their way through. I figured they were like the roaches or the seraphs, just bigger.
I think they all work on kind of the same principles, yeah?
Yeah. So I was thinking I'd need to do it, stay behind and unplug the power cord, just the simplest, fastest way to do it. But then she killed Katanga, and you tackled her, and you all went outside.
Seth nodded.
I don't know, it just crossed my mind. She had no idea what we'd been doing. She and her people wanted to destroy the machine, but right then we wanted it destroyed, so...
Two birds, one stone,
Seth said with a tight-lipped nod.
Yeah.
But why pull the gun on us? Were they in your head or not?
Chase shrugged. The morning sun warmed his back even as it lit up the forest in front of him.
It was just... I knew if I just let her go, she'd get suspicious, and we didn't have a lot of time.
He looked at Veek again.
Right after you stepped outside, the squales started ripping the roof off, literally. They must have torn away the entire back half. I knew we had to shut the doorway, quick. And I didn't want her to stall because she thought I was setting a trap or something.
So, you told her what she wanted to hear?
Pretty much.
She wanted to think we'd all come around and see the light or whatever. I told her I did, so she believed me.
I get that. Seth gave an approving nod, then looked up at the building.
So, that's it? Our world is gone?
They all stared at the doorway.
Yeah.
Veek crossed her arms, let her gaze drop to the base of the stoop.
With the machine destroyed, the two that were here, there, have moved on. They're probably each cruising toward a city right now, feeding on everything.
So we're it, said Chase. The only survivors.
There's probably still some people left for another 2 or 3 days, but effectively, yeah.
And nobody else gets out? There aren't other doorways or buildings or anything?
Veek shook her head.
Not as far as I know. And we really try to keep track of this stuff.
Seth cleared his throat.
Doug?
Her head went side to side again. She pointed at the wooden front door at the top of the steps.
That's it. The way in or out. I mean, he ran away when everything was overlapped, but...
Chase finished it for her.
He probably didn't make it out.
They took a few steps away and stared at the vine-covered structure, listening to the faint hum of electricity muffled by bricks and concrete. The morning sun chased away the last few shadows lurking around the clearing. Chase tried not to look at the bodies scattered at the tree line. Then he focused on one of them, two of them, close to the building. Veek had a good sense of where things would be in the building. She found them an antiquated but serviceable first aid kit. They used most of its supplies on Chase's chest and still had enough left for the gash on Seth's head. She also found a pair of rust-speckled shovels and a set of linen sheets that had yellowed with age. Seth and Chase went through the family's packs and supplies. They found weapons, food, and bottles of water. The three of them ate a quiet breakfast of snack bars and dried fruit. It took them 2 hours to find the cemetery again and get everything there. 2 more to dig the graves. Chase couldn't do much, so Seth and Veek split most of the work. They wrapped Alexander's body in one of the linen sheets, Murdoch's in the other. The old man was put to rest next to his earlier selves. Murdoch took the spot at the end of the row. They had a brief discussion about some kind of markers for Katanga, Doug, and Iman, but all quietly agreed it somehow didn't feel right to have markers without bodies in Kotarovich's graveyard. Seth wiped his hands clean.
Should we say anything?
Veek shrugged. Chase stared down into the graves, at the bodies. He crouched, scooped up a handful of the island's dark soil from one of the piles, and straightened back up.
They were monsters, he said with a glance at Veek. But they were our monsters.
He stretched his hand out over Murdoch's grave, and the soil pattered on the linen sheet down below. Veek and Seth each tossed a handful of dirt into the graves. They stood for another minute. Then Seth took one of the shovels and used it to guide one of the piles back into the grave, covering Alexander's feet. Half an hour later, they headed out of the graveyard's small clearing, following their own shadows into the forest. Seth took the lead, heading along the rough path of stamped-down grass. He'd found one of the bone spears near the base of the building, and he swept it back and forth in front of them. Every second or third pass, he'd switch to tapping the ground. Veek looked over at Chase.
Question for you.
Sure.
How'd you know Anne would unplug the cable? Seems like kind of a risk.
Chase managed a weak smile.
I just tried a dad trick.
What?
He shrugged.
Whenever Dina got in a mood, I'd list off all the chores she could be doing. The last one I said was always the one that stuck, the one she'd stomp off to go do, so I'd make sure the last thing I said was something that needed to get done. Veek's mouth formed a tight smile.
Parenting skills save the world, I guess.
A world, anyway.
He looked back over his shoulder toward the distant building. His chest wound throbbed. Seth stopped, looked at the shadows, and altered their course. Chase gazed at the trees and up at the sunny canopy above them.
Where are we heading anyway?
West side of the island, said Veek. We're back in my world. That means there's a yacht sitting there waiting for us.
We sure it's just sitting there? The family didn't leave behind guards or a crew or something?
If they did, said Seth, we'll persuade them to take us back to the mainland.
Veek stretched her arms and yawned.
Just persuade them to give us a phone. Like I said before, one call, I can get us out of here.
That easy.
I know a guy who knows a guy at DARPA. He pulls a lot of strings for us. Once he hears what's on this island, he'll probably send a private jet.
Probably.
Seth glanced back and gave Chase a grim smile.
Either way, it won't be a problem.
They waded through the grass, and Seth guided them between a clump of dark boulders. Volcanic rock, Chase realized. Two of them flanked a large tree. He wondered if it had been planted by Alex or one of his old partners.
Hey, he said, are we safe out here?
Veek looked around.
I think all of the family members are accounted for, and Alex said the seraphs mostly come out at night.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
It's been a busy day, said Seth.
He swung the spear through the grass again. Chase felt the sun on his back, smelled all the life in the air.
So this is a different world?
Veek smiled.
Yeah.
Looks the same to me.
There's some differences, like technically you don't exist here, or maybe there's already a version of you here, so you're kind of redundant.
What does that mean?
I'll set up a new identity for you. Tweak things a bit so it's still you, but different enough on paper so nobody ever catches on.
You can do that?
Part of the job. I've done it before.
And then what?
I don't know. Get a job, contribute to society, all that sort of stuff.
You hiring?
Maybe. You have any useful skills?
Chase reached back and checked his pocket. He'd tucked the little notebook where his wallet would normally go.
I can probably come up with some kind of resume, but...
He looked over his shoulder again, felt the ache in his chest.
Yeah?
If everything Alex told us was true, that means there's still kids back in the building somewhere. 3 or 4 little kids in, I don't know, hibernation or suspended animation or something.
Veek stopped walking, turned to look back toward the center of the island.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there are. A handful of little Kotoroviches, all needing a new dad to look out for them.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we can figure something out,
she said. Seth snorted.
The only thing I know is working on a ship.
I thought you used to be a police officer, said Chase. You're pretty good with a gun, and in a fight.
Seth smacked at the ground with his spear.
It's tough to find a job that requires those skills.
You could try the police again.
Not with a forged identity.
I don't know,
said Veek.
Have you ever thought about doing private security? We've needed a new Tim at my job for a while now.
I don't understand what that means.
Neither do I, said Chase.
Long story.
Veek waved them on toward the beach.
I'll explain while we wait for the private jet, or while you're driving the yacht back to shore.
Something glinted under a bush up ahead. Chase slowed, dropped behind Veek, and crouched down, pushing the leaves aside. Another wooden toy. This one in pretty good shape. Maybe 4 inches, nose to tail. It had been carved and smoothed and painted with a dark lacquer that still had a nice shine to it. Enough to reflect the sun and catch his attention. He turned the wooden dog over in his hand. Somebody had loved it. They'd probably been sad when they lost it, maybe even gone looking for it. He squeezed the little toy, enjoying the solid feel of it, and then tucked it into his pocket. He caught up with the others, and they headed back to the world.
This has been an Audible Originals production of Terminus, written by Peter Kleins, performed by Ray Porter. Executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2020 by Peter Kleins. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.